Good afternoon, everyone. We want to thank you for joining us here, and we are going to be entering the presentation hosted by HumanWare on transitioning to post-secondary. We've done a couple sessions on post-secondary, and I think it's important for us to get a lot of different information about making that transition and looking at the supports that people are able to access through the Disability Resource Office. Today we have guest speaker Dr. Nina Giselli joining us, and we thank you for participating, and I'm going to go through some house rules here in just a minute. So please let me know that everyone is seeing information on the side. We're delighted to have Nina Giselli joining us, and she's going to tell us a little bit about her background. She's a clinical psychologist, and she works at the Alliant University. But with this, I'm going to turn it over to her, and thank you, Nina, for presenting on the HumanWare webinar today, and we look forward to what you have to share with us.
Thanks, Brendan. Thanks for having me here. It's wonderful to do a presentation in my pajamas and in my bed, so this is really, really nice. I want to share a little bit about myself and why I am interested in this topic. I am a clinical psychologist, and I have a practice that I'm at part-time. I'm also system-wide director of disability services for Alliant International University, and Alliant International University has multiple campuses, so there's about 4 to 6 in California, as well as international sites. And what I do there is I take care of the accessible texts for all of the campuses. So what I'm going to talk about is a big part of my life, especially now that I have a blind student coming in the fall. I also teach, and some of you, Brenda, can you address that? Also, I'm a person that has a learning disability and who stutters, and so some of you said that you're hearing some skips. That's very common for many of us who stutter to get that on the phone, because people think that the phone is going in and out when it's actually our speech that is going in and out. And there is a PowerPoint along with a verbal. That I have, I'm sorry, there is a presentation online that is, there is a present, are you able to hear? Okay, so we're trying to address a technical difficulty. So there is a presentation online, which is at the following address, and if you want to learn more about stuttering there, you can go to that, and there's more information there. So, and also you can sign in as a guest and not have to do a password and all of that stuff. So, Brenda, if you can go to the next slide. Depending on where you are, I'm coming from a U.S. point of view, and I recognize that there might be some Canadians online, that there are laws that dictate both K-12 as well as higher education. And the laws that apply to higher education in terms of accessibility and addressing the needs of students with disabilities is Sections 504 and 508 of the Rehabilitation Act, as well as the Americans with Disabilities Act. Also in K-12, there's IDEA, which is the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And we'd like to know how many of you work with college students so that we can kind of know which where we should put some of our focus. Next slide. There are four basic implications of the law when you look at higher education. One is you admit a student who is otherwise qualified for admissions. So it's not that you will admit a student and waive a GPA. So they have to meet the same qualifications, and if they do, that is an implication that they should be there. Once admitted, students have the right to access all academic and non-academic programs. So that means accommodation should be made not only in the classroom, but they might also have to be made for tutoring, for student government, anything that's under the umbrella of the school. The third one is qualified students are eligible to receive reasonable accommodations that relate to their disability. So a dyslexic isn't going to have a sign language interpreter. It should match up. And in terms of accessible texts, it's really interesting that it may be for a student who is blind, it may be for a student who has LD or dyslexia, but it might also be for psychiatric disabilities too. And actually the case that brought reading as a major life function under the ADA or 504 was based on somebody that has bipolar. So sometimes it's not really intuitive, but it's important to know that accessible texts are going to help lots of different people. Also, students have the right to confidentiality. Next slide. Reasonable accommodations are defined as adaptations aimed at lessening the impact of the disability. So they are designed to mitigate the limitations caused by a disability, and they are individualized to each person and the course. Next slide. Accommodations that have been upheld by the courts include time and a half to double time on exams, and note that it's not an unlimited time. And I think a lot of times in K through 12, that's an accommodation, that they have unlimited time. But I think it's important to start to work within the boundaries of what's acceptable in college so that the child is put onto that track. A quiet room for exams, readers, extra time to complete a degree, limited leaves absences for medical reasons, assistance in registering and applying for financial aid, classroom modifications, equipment modifications, note-taking assistance, and priority in housing and parking. Next slide, please. And the classroom modifications might be where we get the accessible texts. So when I have a student, I go through a process that is outlined here. And so as soon as the schedule comes out, I have the student pick what their courses are going to be. So they always get priority registration, and that is such a key component because I need to work on the books almost immediately, especially for a student who is blind, because they need every single thing accessible to put them on a level playing field. So as soon as the student knows what they're going to take, I then get those books, and that can sometimes be a challenge because faculty don't always get their books in on time. It can sometimes be a wait there. I may have to contact them, all of that stuff. Once I do have the books, I go to one of two sources, and Brenda has lots of resources on both Bookshare and RFBND. So what I do next is I type in the book in Bookshare. If they don't have it, then I go to RFBND and check that. They may or may not have it, and depending on the subject you are looking for an accessible text for, you may find it and you may not. I used to be the disability coordinator for a school that had a master's in holistic studies, and I would have to find books on astrology and that kind of thing. Those were never on Bookshare or RFBND. So that's when I would have to go to the next stage. And the next stage here is I go to the Alternative Media Exchange Database. I'm sorry that I don't have a link here, but you can go into Google and find that. And so if books aren't found at RFBND or Bookshare, I enter their information into the Alternate Media Exchange, and I do one of two things here. First of all, they have a list of the books that have already been scanned by other institutions. So what happens is somebody in Texas may have scanned in a book, and I can ask them for that chapter or the entire book. So it's a way, it's almost like a dating site for accessible texts. So it's a really great resource there. Secondly, you can find publisher information there. So what happens is, if I have a book that is from McGraw-Hill, I can go to the database, and McGraw-Hill, I can access the publisher information. It will say who to contact. It might give a website, and I fill out a form, and I tell them that, and I will tell the publisher that I have a student with a disability who, the Alternative Media Exchange is for staff. So it is not for students. So it would be your role as a disability provider to go on there and find that stuff. And so the nice thing is that you can get the publisher information and contact them, and my email to them usually says something like, I have a registered student with a disability. They have a required book that they have to read. They are a required book. Here's the book. Here's the ISBN. Can you please send that? And oftentimes they will send me the file electronically or through mail. Also, if they don't have it, I try to talk them into giving me the book free. And I do that because the students, and one thing that I should preface here, is that the students have to buy all these books. That when the publisher gives the book file as an accommodation, they are doing that based on the student purchasing it. So it really is an accommodation. Now, what is a blind student going to do with a book? I'm not quite sure, but they do have to purchase that. Now, with RFBND and Bookshare, that isn't the case. So A lot of times publishers are very concerned that the student is going to take it and post it up on the web and give it out to all their friends and all of that stuff, which is why I have my students sign forms, and Brenda's going to post those. And it describes the policy and how all of these things are done, so that the student signs that to ensure that they're not going to give this information out. I can tell the publisher that they have signed that, and then hopefully they will send it to me. I say I probably have to scan in about a fourth of the books that I get. And one thing that, since we are system-wide, or I'm system-wide, and I scan for five or so schools, campuses, a lot of the books tend to be the same, and I'm not the most organized person in the world, so what I've done is I've worked something out with Bookshare that when I scan in a book, I put it onto Bookshare. And what's great about that is all the information's there. Every single book that I've ever scanned is up on Bookshare, so that I have a public place. If my computer crashes and I lose all of these files, it's already up there. And if you go to Bookshare under the collections page, there's a psychology page, which Alliant International University sponsors. And we actually did a book drive to have our faculty donate books, because a lot of times faculty get books free from the publishers, and so we sometimes scan in those. Next page, please. And if anybody has any questions, please interrupt me. And I think we'll have some time for discussion as well. Okay, so what happens when a book needs to be scanned in? So this is the book, and we have a model here in my assistant. And if you can go to the next slide, Brenda. Our model is my assistant, Ben. And here we have Ben unbinding the book. So a lot of times people come by my office and I'm ripping up books, I'm tearing them out, I'm cutting them up, and our librarian gets very, very upset at me when I'm doing that. But it's a necessary part, because then you scan it in. And so you have to get all the sticky tape off of it, all of the binding, so that it can go through and scan in. And luckily we have a copier at my school, which has made my life so much easier, that can scan about 100 pages at a time. It sends it to my email, and then I can scan that in. And next slide. So once it goes from the copier, it goes into my email, then I do a scan into Win. And you can see here I chose to show you guys a screen from Win that wasn't a very good scan. And this is probably really a scan from a reader, and readers make my life hell at times, because they have been a copy of a copy of a copy, and they don't scan in well. And you can see that there are very strange things in here, and a lot of times something like complete goes in as corn-plete, because the R and the N, it's the M is interpreted as an R and an N. So that is when, next slide please, that is when we have to go through and clean up the text. And for some books this is simple, for other books it's not, and it can be a lot of work. And once that's done, we have Ben here kind of doing a ta-da, which means that the book is ready for this student, and then we can also put it onto Bookshare. Next slide, please. And this is Brenda's part.
thanks, Dina, for presenting all of that. And she kind of walked through what she has to do in providing those services. So as more materials are available through Bookshare and RFB&D, the less work we're going to have to do. And those particular sites were created so that we have access to a large repository of material. And those collections are growing on a daily and a monthly basis. So I know personally what life has been when we've had to scan in information for days and hours. And years ago, it would take 1 hour to scan in 30 pages. But it was worth it because I was able to then read that material in an hour rather than reading that material in 10 hours. So it can be worth the time. And now with the technology that we have, with the ability to use the printer to scan in the information, that is just excellent. So I wanted to go to our next step. And HumanWare creates portable solutions. And once material is available, material that is available on RFB&D as well as Bookshare can then be transferred to our portable solutions. And this is what we wanted to talk about a little bit. So anything that has been scanned can be extracted, and there's different file formats. So we can extract MP3, HTML, TXT as well, or RTF within other scanning programs. And what's great is then we can now make those textbooks portable. So when we're at university, as you're commuting back and forth, we have access to that material on an ongoing basis. So one of the things that we do have is we have the Classmate Reader. And by the way, I am the product manager for the Classmate Reader. And it's I'm going to get some feedback here from Nina on, you know, some of that personal interaction with some of the students and herself on using these devices. So what is great is that we then are able to have synchronization of the text and audio. And I'm going to be doing a presentation in about 2 weeks on the new Save As DAISY within Microsoft. And we are able, as producers of content, whether that is a test, whether that is a file that you're working on or publishing, that we can create a document that comes out in an accessible format. So please feel free to register for that session as well. It's quite exciting, and so we're going to walk you through how to do some simple modifications and just get you started on that. So 70% of materials created in that format. And then we can just transfer that file onto these two different devices. And I know we've got a lot of people here that have joined us that are, it's about half and half that are working within the post-secondary institutions, and I'm assuming everyone else might be in elementary or just interested in what we're doing and using the different devices. So we have a built-in text-to-speech, so that means that when material is scanned in, then it will take just those raw files and read it back to us. If we have the extra formats, such as even an HTML file, we're able to navigate through that a little bit easier. And so, as we've discussed before, this plays DAISY formats, which stands for Digital Accessible Information Systems. It's a standard that allows us to navigate between our pages, chapters, and sections. And when someone does it, it's the ultimate solution. And within these providers, Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic create audio files, Bookshare creates text files. But as we continue moving forward, we are going to see more documents created with the text and audio synchronized together. So actually, with the Save As DAISY Microsoft, we are now going to be able to have both of those synchronized together, which is great for the Classmate Reader. The Classmate Reader was designed for people that have learning disabilities, and we also can drop in MP3 files. As university or post-secondary institutes, more people are creating MP3 files and WAV files, and what we can do is then navigate through that material, bookmark sections that are key to us, and it makes life a whole lot easier. I'm going to turn it back to Nina here for just a minute, and she's going to talk about the impact of these two players personally and with the students that she's been working with. I think it's important for you to hear some of those personal anecdotal information. So back to you, Nina.
Thanks, Brenda. I personally am a user of the Classmate, and even though I'm not in school, I use it all of the time. And as a teacher, I use it on that side. And when I have to get through a textbook, it's really great that I don't have to be in front of my computer. And that's what it's been for the past 10 years with the technology like Wynn and Kurzweil. And so since you're tied into the computer, you're tied into a plug or you're tied into a battery. With the Classmate, I could probably read 30 to 60 pages when I take our subway system in the Bay Area, which is BART. I can be on BART. I can take the bus from the BART station to my school and probably get through that many pages. So for me as a teacher, it's been great to review things I've read in the past, because also I can read extremely fast now. I can't read extremely fast when I don't have the assistance, but I can read up to 350 words a minute when it's accessible. When it's not accessible, I'm probably like at 110 with a lot of mistakes in there. So this really is a great way to get through the material. And in college, I think a lot of teachers assign more reading than the students are actually expected to do. And this way, students that have disabilities are more likely to get through that material. Every term we load up one of my students' classmates, and she can just read anywhere. She can read in the cafeteria. She can read on the beach. So it just makes it so much, it makes it an option that is much more like everybody else's options, which is why it helps to level the playing field. And Brenda, if you want to go to the next slide.
Thanks, Nina, for that. I think it's important, as the Disability Resource Office typically provides a lot of, it depends where you are. When I went through university, we actually received grants to cover disability-related costs, and we're fortunate here in Canada to have that option, so I was able to get a system that allowed me to scan in that information. If this is your first time having contact about the Disability Resource Office, one of the other things to be aware of, they're going to try and find you a lot of your information and access to that material. Personally, when I went through university, I scanned in all of my materials. So now if you're able to go to Bookshare and see what has been read in that area or RFBND, that eliminates all that time required to scanning your textbooks. And so there's a variety of assistive technologies out there that are really going to help and assist, and it depends on the university that you're at whether you're able to borrow that borrow that device or go into the office and have use of that. I also wanted to let you know that we've created a variety of support tools for the Classmate Reader as well as the Victor Reader Stream, and those are our portable units, so that we have tutorials and video tutorials, so as you're going through and trying to learn something new, we do have those resources available for you. I also wanted to let you know that we have an extra page just on updating that information, and we have archived other web presentations as well. So with that, I'm going to see if we have any other questions. I'm going to open the floor. Otherwise, we've really come to that half-hour mark. We didn't want to take a lot of your time, but there's a lot of work that goes on in creating access when you go to school. So it's important to do that as soon as possible, to get your materials as quickly as possible, and to create that relationship with your Disability Resource Office so that you aren't 2 weeks into it and asking for those files then. So the sooner that you go in and create that relationship, the sooner off they're going to be able to help you and get the materials that you need. So if I have anyone else that would like to participate or make comments, we would love to hear from you. So to do that, what I'm going to have you do is you can hit the control key, and that will allow you to speak if you want to. Another way to participate is by opening up to the public chat area. So I'm going to open it up here for a few minutes. Otherwise, we are going to finish off the presentation. I'll turn it back to you, Mina, if you have anything else you'd like to say.
Great. Thanks, Brendan. It looks like Lynn may have raised her hand. I'm not sure. So I'll let you kind of monitor that.
I'm a he. So the scanning that you must do for like 25% of your books, I can imagine how labor intensive that is. And I just don't understand why the publishers will not give you an electronic copy of the book.
That is a wonderful question. And there are some states, like in California and I think Texas as well, I'm in California, that there are laws saying that any book that is used in higher education has to be made accessible for a student with a disability by the publisher. And really the law only applies to community colleges and state schools, but luckily there's been a trickle-down effect to private schools like ours. And the thing is, not all publishers are aware of this. They may be smaller and may not have the files. They may not be aware that there is such a law. So we also need to educate them a bit too. And then also I've had some horrible experiences where there have been publishers who said, nope, you can't scan in the book. You can't put it on tape. You can't. And these are usually publishers where the author is the publisher, so there's a little bit of ego involved in there as well, and that's actually why I put everything on to Bookshare, because they are covered by the Shafe Act, so publishers can't really come after us because of that aspect. So I don't even ask them anymore like I did in the past.
Go ahead, Randy. You had a question or a comment. And Allie, then I'll follow up with you. So if Randy doesn't pipe in, then please go ahead and ask your question, Allie.
Now, in a situation that, let's say, if the author and a publisher says that you cannot transfer the books into an accessible format, what happens then? What do you do then?
So I believe the question was, if you can't transfer the text into an accessible format, what do you do? And this has come up around statistics, for me at least, because there is a way of doing it, but it can be hard. And then what are you going to do about handouts? Many of our stats instructors don't do their handouts electronically, so they're written out. And so that's when I work with my student assistant in sometimes even typing it all out. And I know that sounds like just painstaking, but our students have the right to access everything in the same way, or to have access to everything that our non-disabled students have. So it is a really important aspect of that. If it's something like a reader, I try to get a hold of the original article so that it may not have been scanned 10,000 times and maybe it's a little more clear and it's not so cut off. And this is where my student assistant has been invaluable there. And I didn't quite hear everything, so I do hope that I answered that.
Answered pretty good.
With that, I'm going to leave the presentation here for right now. If Scotty can write his question down, that would be greatly appreciated. I wanted to let you know about upcoming presentations that we are going to be doing here in August still. So next Thursday, we're having a presentation with Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, and they've got some great news to share with us. So please join us for that. It's going to be a hands-on kind of presentation, so if you wish to participate, please register so that I'm able to make sure we have the appropriate room and web design for that. We also are going to do the Save as Daisy presentation on September 2nd. We're going to be covering the dyslexic brain on September 15th, and we're going to do a parent presentation for K-12 on October 8th, and I'm looking at a presentation for post-secondary and the relationship between parents and their children and the post-secondary institution and how that relationship changes. So we're going to be covering that, and then we're going to be having Bookshare present again on November 4th. So hopefully you have been able to enjoy the presentation, and I'm going to send out some information on whether you enjoyed this presentation.
Also, if anyone wants to email me, my username here is where you can email me. And thank you so much. If there's anything else I can answer, please let me know.